Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Get in on all the sports action and your chance to win up to 100 times your cash with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Rog. Hello, gorgeous. You get here early and you swoop up all the gems.
Most people are here just for the combo board updates, Rog.
Forthcoming.
From the Embassy Row Studios in the crap part of Bedford, New York. The crap part, well, of a very sunny West Hollywood, California. It's a Men in Blazers Spotify green room.
Oh, Davo, I'm a bit sad tonight. I've got to be candid.
Everton haven't even played, Rog.
I know. I've just sent Martin Scorsese off to board in a kennel for the first time ever. I've got to go to New Orleans tomorrow, and my heart is a little bit broken.
It's good for him. He'll love it playing with all those other dogs. He'll be exhausted by the time you pick him.
You've got such a boarding school mentality, Dave. I'm just like,
well, no, I've put dogs in boarding so much. It's like, it's great. He's going to have the time of his life. He loves being around other dogs. That's what it's about.
He does love being around other dogs, but do other dogs give him, overfeed him like I do, David?
Maybe not. Maybe not.
Is this our podcast today in dogs, or are we talking about the football?
I thought we were just having a conversation with each other. I had no idea that we were doing any content. No, this is our weekly Spotify Green Room, Rog, every Wednesday at 7 p.m. during the Premier League season and during international breaks. For those of you GFOPs joining here on Green Room Live, start asking your questions in the chat right now, and we'll pull you up on stage later in the show, if you can call it that, to hear from you. For those of you listening to this on a delay via your pod radios, you're not hearing this until Friday morning. That's in the future. The only way you can hear us live and have your questions featured on the pod is by joining us here on the Green Room. Can we get a twist? Rogelio.
Oh, you can. If everyone here gems me up in the fierce, you can get me. I'm just going to read out the name. I'm feeling low. I need the validation of gems. I'm going to read out the name that everyone gems me for the rest of this show today. That's how we're going to do biz. Martin Scorsese, I miss you so much. I'm going to get quite hammered in the next hour. Davo, you can get a toast, you beautiful human being. I will raise my first third bud of the day. It's actually my fifth or sixth, to the great Midge Purse of Gotham FC, the charismatic striker who was this week called up once again for the US Women's National Team for the forthcoming matches against Australia. Midge had missed the cut for the Olympic team, and it was a moment which truly crushed her. And so to see on her Instagram today, her posting a photograph being hugged by her dad, and she wrote the following, I think it's really beautiful. She wrote, "Can't tell you what it's like to have a dad who hugs you after a huge setback and says he's more proud of how you responded to failure than he is of your success. I'm so humbled by all the grace God's given me in a long year of not understanding his plan. So grateful for my family, friends, teammates. Thank you for the nomination. Here's to keeping the faith." And I read that. I just thought, what an incredible father. What an incredible daughter. What an incredible approach to football. An incredible approach to life. An even better approach to life, Davo. To Midge, to her dad, to her surviving failure, to her future success, courage.
Absolutely, Rog. Okay, to the football we begin with the US men's national team's impending World Cup qualifying clashes. The first against arch-rival Mexico in Cincinnati on Friday night. And then Tuesday, they go to Jamaica. Two very important games for the baby Eagles here, Rog. Screech, screech. We launch our new podcast, American Dreams. Well, you did, in partnership with that mighty beverage, Budweiser. Beautiful job, Rog. Beautiful interview with the magical Tyler Adams. Find it on our platforms. But what do you make top line of the news ahead of Friday's massive, massive game?
I mean, it is a massive, massive game, Dave. I mean, I'm sure you look out of your window in California, UAA, and just people, just all above on the streets, just like, oh my God, I cannot wait for Friday night. The countdown to kickoff is now.
Well, I mean, in Los Angeles, that's a bad place to really ask that question, because yes, there are people who are incredibly excited walking around the streets, but most of them are carrying Mexican flags, Roger.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, an amazing part of our football culture in America, and I adore that in every single regard. But I wish this game was making more noise. I wish this game, and I'd love to know in the chat, I mean, if people are feeling that this game, I mean, to me, this game is quite massive for a variety of different reasons. I'm sure there'll be lots of questions. As this team assemble, for me, it's a true moment of reckoning, Dave. It's a two-game window, not a three-game window, which is respite in a US campaign, which, if we're looking big picture, has been very much our dreams of greatness meeting CONCACAF reality. And the twin storylines so far have been that of a raw, inexperienced squad filled with potential walking into a Star Wars cantina that is CONCACAF play for the first time and finding that all their pedigree, all their potential doesn't always shine here like it does in Europe. It's like imagine players who are bred to be carbon fiber racing bikes trying to learn to off-road here in CONCACAF. It's not always pretty. And you couple that, Davo, with the other storyline, that of Greg Berhalter, our manager, learning by doing, both as an international coach and within a CONCACAF qualification process, which he's never led a team along before, which is completely, I mean, it's like doing the Squid Games for the first time. You never really know unless you've done it. Occasionally, we look very naive tactically. It's been a bit Manchester United. If you look like in the dark results, followed by a bloody good one, and that good one delivered mostly by magical moments and not by a dominant kind of full game performance. So how are you feeling, David? Because this is the big one. It's the regional rivals. It's Mexico. We've beaten them twice this summer. Mexico know that. And I know this is going to piss off a lot of our fans who made magical memories watching Christian take off his jersey after delivering victory in the CONCACAF Carabao Nations Conference League or whatever it was called. And then our B-teamers, Legette's Army, winning an undermanned Gold Cup. But as we said at the time, those made nice memories. Those were great nights. Those gave SportsCenter great highlight clips. I think one of the anchors said, and the US has just won the World Cup. But, you know, neither meant a lot long-term from a footballing POV. How do you feel ahead of this one?
Look, I don't want to, because I know you're very excited, and I know a lot of our listeners are very excited about this game, and it feels like it's a really important game. But actually, if you look at the standings, you've got to ask yourself, is what happens, you know, not with how great it will feel, you know, when the US men's national team win, but what will happen, God forbid, if the US lose? And the reality is that will put them seven games into this tournament, this qualifying tournament, halfway through, Rog, seven games down, seven games to play. They will have won three, drawn two, lost two, and they'll have 11 points, and they'll be looking pretty likely to still qualify. So I don't think it's as – I think everything – we're looking at everything through the prism of the last qualification campaign. We still have this sort of hangover from that. We still have this little tick that makes us think, oh, no, we don't want to be in that final game against Trinidad and Tobago. Trinidad and Tobago aren't here. Neither Trinidad nor Tobago are here. This is a different situation. they can afford to just play and express themselves. You know, Greg Berhalter can throw the behind-the-back passes with abandon. He can go running in crowded downtown areas. He can wear a pair of even less interesting sneakers, Rog.
And that, no. That's a line too far, David.
And it's all going to be fine. It's all going to be fine.
God, without his sneakers, what is he really? What can I? You know, they used to talk about AVB turning up for job interviews with just an incredible PowerPoint. Just like,
Yeah, loved a PowerPoint.
Greg probably just said in the interview, here's my sneaker collection. Judge for yourself. Don't take away his sneakers, Davo. A man without sneakers is really, I mean, just a boy. Look, here's how I think about it. The US, I mean, we don't get many barometers, Davo. We're looking for barometers of where we are. That's ultimately, cheers, mate. We don't get many barometers of where we are. And this is really the barometer. This one does mean everything. I think it really...
It doesn't mean everything. If they lose, they'll still be about the same standard they were before they went in.
Oh, this one for 3 Gs. I think this is like, if he wins, he will silence... I mean, he will silence all the haters. Deliver a victory against a team we have not beaten since September 10th, 2013 in World Cup qualifying. Yeah, we lost at home. We got a draw at the Azteca in the last qualifying cycle. To me, Mikel Antonio and Jamaica lurking is quite a fascinating game also. But everything is about this Mexico team. This Mexico team who've been far from perfect themselves, have Cesar Montes out with injury. I think their centre-back pairing is going to be got out. You've got Pulisic back. It's going to be interesting to see his match fitness, Dave. Let me ask you this. I'm sure there's going to be questions in the chat about the US team, and we'll save our powder and wait a little bit for that. But would you start Pulisic, David? Would you, knowing his fitness, having watched him trot around the field and fire some shots in the vicinity of the opponent's net, you could say, since his return, would you start him?
US fan in me, yes. Chelsea fan in me, absolutely not, because I want him back playing for Chelsea. He seems to only be fit for like half a game every other international break right now, and I'd love him to return to Chelsea and be able to play. I think that's the more significant thing for his career going forward and for his, ability to, turn out and be great for the US men's national team. But yeah, if I'm Greg Berhalter, you're playing against Mexico. They're the best team in your region. It's a huge game, as you said, for him. He's going to feel like he needs to win it to silence the haters, and which is he doesn't understand because he's wearing such interesting sneakers and he's throwing behind the back passes and he goes jogging in downtown areas. What more can he give?
I can't give any more of myself, lads.
So, yeah, I think he should probably be starting his best player.
By the way, I can feel, and ask you questions in the chat. Let's talk some US men's national team. I can feel a Weston McKennie banger coming on. He owes us one. By the way, no Serginho Dest, no Gio Reyna. I'd love to know what that makes people feel. Joe Scally, a debut in qualifying, which I'd love to see, but I don't think Triple G bludge new talent in big games. There is some interesting possibilities. It's going to be interesting what Triple G does. The one thing I'd say, I'm fascinated to see young Jesus Ferreira get some minutes alongside teammate for now, Ricardo Pepi, a Colombian-American and a Mexican-American leading the American line. I could not love that idea more, especially Pepi. This is what my last word on the US before we die, other than the worry I have that John Brooks wasn't picked just for a dip in club form. He's like one player that has veteran experience. This is going to be a children's crusade. But Ricardo Pepi, 18 years old, from El Paso, Texas, the borderlands. And I love this quote. He was asked about what he remembers about this rivalry. He said, I remember being 10, 11 years old. By the way, that was like 2 or 3 years ago. He said, I used to watch every time they play Mexico in the US, having my family beside me. It was just rooting for Mexico back then. And now I'm representing the United States. What must he be feeling? It's really rather wonderful. And that, to me, is the essence of this remarkable rivalry. And I can't wait to watch it. We'll take your questions. Let's hit some quick Premier League news beats, Dave, and then we can plummet headfirst into the just joy of humanity. Oh, the humanity that is GFOP questions.
Yeah, we got some Premier League news, Rog, including even more good news for third-place West Ham fans. Big news related to the condiments at the Tottenham Lodge and the return of a Premier League legend as manager.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be surface on the Stevie G to Aston Villa. I'm sure we'll talk about him. Stevie G, Aston Villa! Defecting from Rangers, where he delivered the first title in a decade. How do we feel about how that actually translates? Does it even translate, Davo? Being the best in Scottish football, does that translate through to... I mean, I don't even know what the equivalent is. It's like me having, saying I've got a couple of hairs on my head.
I mean, look, Glasgow Rangers are top of the Scottish Premiership, Rog. It is amazing that he's leaving there, 13 games into a season. Only 4 points ahead of Celtic. I wonder how Rangers fans are feeling about this. I mean, it must be... when you're doing well, you've constantly threatened with physical harm. I can't imagine what it's like right now. And I wonder what Rangers are going to do, who they're going to turn to next. I think it's fascinating. Aston Villa, but it seems like a good job. I mean, they've got, new owners. They very ambitious owners. They want to splash the cash. Aston Villa is a sleeping giant of a football club. It has big fans. And... he's clearly a good young manager and an ambitious one.
I always thought he continued to apprentice until Jurgen Klopp was ready to follow Benitez at Everton. But what do I know? Talking of great change at Liverpool Football Club, sad, sad day for many Reds when the club announced that their sporting director today, Michael Edwards, will leave at the end of the season, which is a very inside soccer announcement at any other club other than Liverpool. I think their net spend is like 10th in the Premier League. Obviously, they've overachieved, managed to levitate, managed to crack the economic code. A lot of it is said to be down to Michael Edwards. I must say, his announcement has been met with real dread by Liverpool fans. You'd think from the reaction that Liverpool were in the relegation zone, it's an amazing response. I mean, he is an incredible scout, data analyst, recruiter. He was a gent that is reputed to have identified Mohamed Salah, Andy Robertson, to have led to the signing of Virgil van Dijk, Diego Jota, Fabinho. I'm fascinated. If there are Liverpool fans in the chat, how you are feeling. I'm blown away by just the deep, impulsive, oh my God, that's the end is now reaction to a remarkable component of the club. But just like the reaction has been genuinely dark. And I'd love to try and understand that. Because to me, I admire Liverpool in the infrastructure. So many individuals pin that on that one gentleman. But Spurs, let's talk about them, Davo. And the big news, Antonio Conte digging in. Great piece in The Athletic about his early days there, trying to create change, foster a sense of togetherness, supreme fitness, so much running. And the headline in the tabloid has been, Antonio Conte has banned ketchup, mayonnaise from the Tottenham canteen. Told some players are overweight as he's banned brown sauce, soy sauce and ketchup, as if that is his big change, Davo. What do you make of it all?
Well, this could be, look, he's an Italian man of great taste, and it may just be a culinary decision. It may have nothing to do with the fitness regime. It may just be like, what is that? It's a tomato ketchup. It's not a real tomatoes. It's going to be a mayonnaise. What is this?
We're taking the fresh garlic, we chop it up, we mix it with the olive oil, like that. He just thinks, it's not that he thinks it's going to make Tottenham a top four club, it's just that he thinks it's an offence against culinary science, brown sauce.
Yeah, he wants to use better ingredients, food.
Yeah, sod off of your Marmite, you sad English bastards. I do remember being at J-Dub's wedding and just like the what was the cheese? The pasta fazool only, it was really an amazing... It was just like that. What was the J-Dubs? What was your cheese? What was the That was it.
What was your cheese?
It was like a, it was like, it's like they got in the best mozzarella. It was like
a mozzarella. Yeah. Mozzarella has no, yeah.
That's special. It was like no one cared. They didn't care who the DJ was. They didn't care. Like the bar was genuinely, it was amazing. But it was like, eh, whatever. But like, it was handmade crap. Mozzarella, handmade. They got the special handmade mozzarella, man. And that was just like, genuinely, I think that's probably, it was it was Vinnie Boombat. I just shout out to Vinnie Boombats and the hand mozzarella. Apparently you can't get legally married unless you get Vinnie Boombats on the case. I think that's what he wants. He wants to install his own men, Antonio Conte.
Yeah.
F off brown sauce. Hello, Vinnie Boombats. That's how you do it.
There is actually, I think, a early 2000s club classic called Cut the Mozzarella, which plays at every Italian-American event I've ever been to. Cut the Mozzarella. It's like it's a thumper.
Rod. Oh, handmade crap from Vinnie Boombat. Shout out. God, we should get Vinnie Boombat on the show. I will say, when I read the thing about the brown sauce, I did think it was Antonio Conte, hearing him ban like Marmite and all that English. It was like, when a musician like James Taylor just opens up the set with Fire and Rain right from the beginning, this feels so bloody good. He's back. We're here. We're living this. One other note before we jump in to the questions. Great day for West Ham. Czech businessman Daniel Krasinski, the only Czech businessman we football fans in America really know, has purchased 27% stake in West Ham. He owns Czech top flight side Sparta Prague. He's going to take a place on the board alongside the two pornographers, David Sullivan and David Gold. you know, what can I say? Hammers, it gets better and better and better and better. Mo money, mo moys. God bless the Hammers. That is what it takes. Great questions coming into the chat. I've been trying to keep the focus on the hot sauce and the Conte story. But I will say, David, people are steaming in with great topical, substantive questions, so let's get to it.
By the way, it occurs to me with that 27% Czech ownership, that Czech pipeline that is giving West Ham all these great players is going to continue. It gets insured.
But I get a feeling, having, you know, knowing a little bit about David Gold and David Sullivan, they probably were like, what we need is a big, big checkbook. That's what we need to make this club go well. And he like walks in. And he's like, "Oh, I am Czech." And they're like, "That's what we need in this club.
The name is on the tin." I love it.
God, it's not going to end well, West Ham. Let's be honest. Oh, I hope it ends well. God, I hope it ends well for David Moyes. Let's say it. Let's get in to the Q&A question. If you have a question, bang it in. Oh, my God, the chat is just like, honestly, the Bible's shorter than the chat tonight. You guys are the greatest, guys. That is why we Spotify Green Room in the face. Daniel Elk himself is listening to this crap before we have...
Let's hope
he is, Dave. He loves talking about Vinnie Boombat's hand cheese. He's just made a $40 million bid for Vinnie Boombat's work. Dave, let's go for it. Are you ready for the Q&A portion?
Yeah, absolutely. Remember, if we move you to the stage, stay muted until we call on you. And reminder to everyone listening, once again, the only way you can ask a question is to actually join us here live on the Green Room app. Rog, who is up first?
David, should I feel... I'm so sad about Martin Scorsese.
It's okay. It's okay.
Okay.
Pull up something. Let's get on with the
Vince Early,
pull
come on up.
Together.
Make me feel better with the question from the gods. Tell us where you're from. Vince Early.
Howdy, gentlemen. I am in South Jersey, Cherry Hill area, outside of...
Yeah. We know it well.
You guys came here, I think, in 2018 for the Philly show, and never going to forget when you brought on Ernie Stewart and he got booed relentlessly on the stage, which unfortunately leads me to my question. So I'm having a hard time being a fan of the U.S. soccer, not the players, but the whole setup. And the concern I have, or the issue I have, is with the soccer media, which I'm sure you guys have heard before, and the lack of criticism for Triple G. Never trust your Greg with three G's, as they say. So my criticism of him, or of the media, I should say, is when Klinsmann was in charge, there was a lot of Rankle to get him out of there. And since that time, we said Bruce Arena was going to be the guy. He's going to right the ship. In fact, I feel like we were, told to basically be put in our place by, and again, I love Rob Stone, but Rob Stone's like, Bruce Arena's the guy. You guys can shut up now. And we don't qualify. And then Greg Berhalter gets selected after 2 years of looking for a guy on the inside. And I have a hard time dealing with that. And I'm not really sure how to support a guy that, you know, again, John Brooks doesn't get called up for club form, but Sebastian Legette's still in there. I don't know. So just kind of pushing it over to you guys.
Oh, Vince Early, when I hear your voice, I feel cheered. I feel like a Jim's cheesesteak is being jammed into my mouth, and I love every single bite of it. You beautiful man. Yeah. Shout out to the Theatre of the Living Arts in Philadelphia. We love that place. By the way, I love Philadelphia football fans. It is a proper football culture, and we can't wait to be back. Dave, it's an incredible question. I have so many answers, so you go for it.
So, I'm going to skirt around it and then let you dive in harder. I would say that it's fair to say that Roger and I have a complicated relationship with US soccer media and many in US soccer. Or maybe I'm just speaking for myself, Roger.
Definitely.
But it's,
you are speaking for yourself.
You love all the... Yeah, well, I can say I have a complicated relationship. I also have a complicated relationship, I should say, with the English soccer media, who, until Gareth Southgate revealed himself to be literally the most sensible man in Britain... better than any of our politicians, better than anybody. The British media was so critical constantly of every single manager, whatever decision they made, everything they did. It sort of became miserable, and you could sort of feel them, you know, literally rooting against the national team at all points just so they could write more poison pen stories. The US soccer media are, and I think there's a reason that they got that way, because they were constantly defending themselves or felt in a defensive position against, you know, other international media figures and sort of criticizing they came from a country where they didn't know anything about football. They are absurdly...
Which they constantly do get on Twitter, it should be said. Like, if they pop their head over Twitter, they get slapped down. I mean, we get slapped down by other medias.
Yeah, but they are, to my mind, absurdly defensive and defensive of US soccer. And I think it would be good to have a media who are more critical. I think it would be helpful, not just for the US setup, but for a lot of questions to be asked about MLS, what MLS is doing to develop players, you know, how that league works all the time, and the US team, and to feel like Greg does have some pressure on him, because it seems like he's getting a very comfortable run.
You know, I think there's a new, there's a ton of great soccer writers in this country who I adore and are really terrific. Is that, by the way, not just new. I mean, you look at the likes of Jonathan Tannenwald, who have ground out legit going through court documents in instances of the US women's national team lawsuit. And just doing incredible work. I mean, the Clinton thing. So the reality is, you're asking an incredible question, Vince Early. It's super complex. It's super complex because Jürgen Klinsmann came from the outside, and a lot of football culture in America is jerry-rigged and absolutely singular because it's jerry-rigged from the pay-to-play system on upwards, and just the suburban reality of many of the footballers from that time in the last cycle. And Jürgen... I always remember the Wall Street Journal interview he did with my friend Matt Futterman, where Clint Dempsey had just signed for Tottenham Hotspur. He was like the lead star of the US squad back then. And Jürgen decided to ping him and said, good, it's good you play for Tottenham Hotspur. Now go higher. You've not done shit, was his quote, I think. You need to now go to a better team, push yourself higher. There's always another level, was his quote. And that was astounding at the time. Clint, no one had gotten higher than Clint. No one had done more than Clint. You know, Clint was one of the player of the season candidates in his best season. And that he singled him out to try harder, go higher. And the tide went in on Jürgen when he was trying to pull US soccer out. He wanted them to leave MLS to go to Europe. Dominate in Europe, to push themselves. His thing was play, the best players play at the best level with the best players against the best players. And as he said that, every single star he had. Michael Bradley, who was phenomenal for a period at Roma. Phenomenal. Michael Bradley came back to Tottenham. Jozy Altidore had a, you know, a complicated time, often good in European leagues, but always in the Premier League, a bridge too far. Came back to Toronto also. And I think to his horror, Clint Dempsey, you know, it didn't work at Tottenham. And rather than go back to a, you know, like an Everton or a Newcastle, a lower level club, he just was like, I've had enough. I'd like to go and play in America, have a good life for my kids, fish, get paid on. And by the way, MLS was paying them a multiple more to play in America than they ever would have gotten in Europe. He came back too. So Klinsmann was exposed there. Klinsmann was like, go to Europe at a time when the tide was coming back in. And the funny thing is, we've got an opposite reality. Greg Berhalter is the all-American coach who understands the American player. That's why we have Leggett. That's like why we have Areola. But he's coaching at a time when every young player, 17, 18, 19, is desperate to go to Europe. And so you've almost got, it's the yang to Jurgen's yin. And the thing I think about is, you know, the soccer media, it's a tough job, man. Journalism is a brutal job. It is a brutal job for very little pay. And I will say the American soccer media do it with incredible passion, incredible joy, incredible intelligence. And by the way, incredible output. More fascinating to me is what do the players who are coached by the likes of Tuchel or, you know, at Dortmund, or even, I mean, I'm fascinated. What does Tyler Adams think? You know, being coached by Jesse Marsh, who's the one American coach really pushing himself out there, trying to learn the European craft, taking some licks, having some success. What do they think when they're briefed by Tuchel and then they're briefed by Greg? I don't know the answer to that, by the way. But ultimately, that question will determine our success. What goes through their head when they can? They all clearly love each other. They all clearly love being together. They all clearly feel a joy in pushing in the same direction. But that question is quite fascinating to me. What they think will ultimately determine our joy. You're a beautiful man. We love New Jersey. Thank you for being with us, Vince. Oh, and let's bring up, before I know it, these initials terrify me, but we'll still bring it up anyway, Stephen Sobel. Stephen, where are you? And what's your question?
Hey, calling in tonight from New Haven, Connecticut.
Hey, the big CT. What is going on, fella? Home of great pizza. My God, you make me hungry. That's a theme in both questions so far. What's your question, Stevie Sobel?
Well, I'll give you something else to dig your teeth into, I guess, other than pizza. So coming off of your interview with Tyler Adams, I'm curious, you know, you've now interviewed so many players. How does he compare to other players his age? And is there anybody else he reminds you of, maybe from a different country or of a much different age? And did he confirm your theory that he should be the captain now and for the foreseeable future?
Oh, Stephen Sobel, I've said this many times on the record. From when I first met him, he came in to our studios, J-Dubs, correct me if I'm wrong, when he was 19 playing for the Red Bulls. And let into the microphone. By the way, the microphone, if you look at the video, is far too short for me. And my posture, which is already terrible, was like full-on Fagin. But he let into the microphone and was like, my goal is to be the captain of the US men's national team for a long, long time. And so the only other player I've interviewed who had that surety, that confidence, that belief, that self-narrative, and who actually felt like he could do it too, was Trent Alexander-Arnold, who I interviewed at a very young age at Liverpool. And he'd grown up peeking through the fence at Liverpool's training ground and had seen Stevie Gerrard, had seen Jamie Carragher, had seen the Liverpool lads lead that team. And he told me, he said, my dream is to be the Liverpool lad that captains Liverpool to glory. And I adore it in every way. But I've got to say, Tyler Adams I adore because his surety, his sacrifice, also his maturity are very, all I can say, Stephen, so I'm asking, I guess you're asking me, how rare is it that I have encountered those qualities? And I'll say it's incredibly rare. incredibly rare, and I revere them. I really respect it. I love watching him on the field. At times, to me, he's been the brains and the heart, the one constant of this US qualification process so far. And the last thing I'll say is that, I mean, his self-narrative is amazing. To actualize it even more so, he takes leadership so seriously. And I've tweeted it many times. You can Google it. At Men in Blazers, Tyler Adams, captain. At Rog Bennett, Tyler Adams, captain. And it's so fascinating. When I first started to say it, there were so many people who were like, BS, this is Pulisic's team. And then for a while, I got, well, did you mean Weston McKennie? Did you spell check Weston McKennie wrong? And, you know, we moved to flavor. I mean, Christian Pulisic is not a flavor of the month. Weston McKennie is not a flavor of the month. They are both truly talented human beings. But Tyler Adams has something that neither of them in the leadership realm that neither of them has. And I think in the podcast that we taped, he articulates it in his words, how he thinks about it more and better and more articulately than I need to use our time tonight defining. But it struck me when he was 19. It strikes me even more now. And my God, he's exactly what we need, David.
Yeah, look, I've had the opportunity to watch a couple of his games for Leipzig this season. And he shows flashes of, you know, genuine, you know, international class potential. I think these are going to be a big couple of years for him, though, Rog, you know, in terms of his both club and national team performance. And, you know, it's not a straight line for the development of young players. We've seen it a lot. Like these years in your, you know, early 20s are massive. And to see him continue to develop, continue to improve. And he definitely has the leadership quality. Let's see how he develops as a player.
I mean, that's exactly what, that's the one thing that worries me in every regard with him. I mean, by the way, it is, you say the same about Pulisic, it's the Grant Hill fear in every regard. But that is it. He's a glorious human being. And when he's in the team, I must say my optimism factor is X2 when he is in the US team in every way. Stephen Sobel, you're a beautiful human being. It's a joy to be with you. Charles Heckman, come be with us. Where are you from? What's your question?
I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm a big Spurs fan. So my question is, so if Conte won't let them have ketchup or mayonnaise, can they at least have hot sauce?
Yeah.
And what's your favorite hot sauce?
You know, Italian hot sauce. I'm trying to think. I mean, they do have some very, very hot dishes in Italy. They like a bit of hot food. I'm worried that Conte might not eat a lot of hot food because it might singe the hair connectors to his rug. He probably has to like go for something a little bit more benign. I love hot food. I don't know if anybody else has this. I have a very strong hiccup reaction to hot food. So I have to stay off the hot sauce way too much. I have to just keep it just, you know, under the range of me getting unbearable hiccups.
I will tell you the best hot sauce I've ever had is on, and I don't know what it is exactly, and maybe in the comments you'll know, is, I mean, I love a curry. I think, I can't remember if it was with J-Dubs, we shot in just outside of London's Brick Lane, the original curry row. I ate the hottest curry in Britain, which in many ways I'm still recovering from in a good way. but I will say the joy of my life, like the most beautiful, I don't even know what it was on there, but we went straight from the airport in Nashville to Prince's Hot Chicken with our bags, and we ordered the extra, extra, extra hot. And other than my swearing-in ceremony for my citizenship, I have rarely felt more American. It was absolutely glorious. And you know what? I'm going to email Benitez now. I think getting Everton on the Prince's Hot Chicken sauce will be and increase our XG by at least 0.002. You're a beautiful man. What is your favorite hot sauce? What would you advise in every regard, Charles Heckman?
There's a local hot sauce up here in West Michigan called Bliss Blast. and they take like five different peppers and they cure it in like these bourbon, whiskey, beer barrels and stuff like that. And they let it sit for a year. It's really good.
Good Lord. By the way, just Google Rob Stone, hottest pepper in America. Oh. If you are bored right now, just go and enjoy yourself. That's one of Rob Stone, a great American, his greatest television hits of all time. Charlie Heckman, come be with us anytime. People calling on Conte to go in, to go on Hot Ones in the comments. Which I would, look at us now, would never sound more menacing than yeah. Antonio Conte's lips.
Rog, it's an arrabbiata is the hot Italian sauce, of course.
He doesn't care about that. He just eats a cigarette. He just light a cigarette and then he'd eat it, is the honest team. Oh, Gabriel Fitzgibbon. Come be with us, Gabriel Fitzgibbon. Where are you? And what's your question?
I am in Seattle, and my question is, with the World Cup qualifiers happening this week and next week, is there any chance that clubs start putting into their negotiations with players clauses that would limit the number of World Cup qualifiers they play in?
Oh, Gabriel Fitzgibbon, first of all, how is Seattle? I miss that city so.
Windy, rainy, and grey.
Sounds amazing. I'll be right there. That is such a fascinating question, Dave, particularly on the day we learn that Paul Pogba has injured himself and is on crutches, having had a muscle strain in French training. You know, immediately the British tabloids are like, may Paul Pogba have played his last game for Manchester United. If he goes in the January transfer window, obviously having no medical insight into what the injury is, but it's a great question, really getting at the heart of the tension between club and international play.
Yeah, I think it would be against FIFA, UEFA, CONCACAF laws, which is ridiculous, as though there are.
There are no laws.
Yeah,
in the
it's one, because
mate.
because none of those associations obey any laws whatsoever, Rog. But I do think it's against, I don't think they can do that. I think they would love to do it. And I think we're going to see the disruption to the Premier League season with the African Cup of Nations right happening this season, this winter, Rog. You know, definitely with what I referenced earlier with, you know, not ideal timing for Chelsea fans with Christian Pulisic going off to go and play US men's national team qualifiers, just as he's getting over his awareness, just as his awareness is becoming something that he is less aware of. So, but I don't think we'll see that in the future. But, you know, that may have been a Super League stipulation.
I mean, Karen, Gabrielle, we're getting to you, Karen. Please do not go away. Gabrielle, the reality is that it's one of the most fascinating parts of global football for me is that when we were growing up, the glory of playing for your country was enormous and players adored it. And then in the early 2000s, when football started to be soaked with money, playing for your international team kind of did become a bit crap briefly. England got knocked out of, which World Cup would it have been, Dave? The I played crap, here's my book. Was that 2006 it would have been, where all, you know, Ashley Cole, Frank Lampard, Stevie G, all signed massive book contracts. England did terribly. And the quote was, you know, they all signed big book contracts. I played crap, here's my book. And they all immediately went to the bargain bin. It'd be like commercial needs. They didn't need the money of playing for the country. They're suddenly soaked in money. One of the fascinating thing is how international football has actually regained its luster. You know, we've seen in the past, I mean, the Euros, you saw like players like Jordan Shaqiri just bleeding for his team. I mean, the World Cup was just full of just incredible performances single-handedly by individuals looking to etch themselves again into the nobility of their nation. I think the only way that there could be clashes is if Arsene Wenger isn't given a managerial job in some terrible league very soon and keeps hawking his World Cup once every 2 years. Just debacle of an idea that unfortunately Jill Ellis has been roped in to start banging the can for. That is the only way there could be a clash. But yeah. I kind of feel that, particularly this England team, for instance. I mean, 2006, they were so unlikable. There was nothing. I'm looking in my office at a poster of Stevie G, Wayne Rooney and Frank Lampard from that World Cup. And just how, I mean, it's just a reminder of how crass and commercial the whole thing was. And the reality is, they are bleeding for England again. I feel like, if anything, the players care more about international football right now than they have in a long time.
Yeah, but I think it's a slightly more complicated issue with the players based in South America and the African, you know, players who play for African nations. It's those players leaving Premier League clubs, which seems to be the big issue, than going to leave to play for England in Europe.
Yeah, the South America thing is the COVID thing, is the reality. The players themselves, I mean, I've got to say, Richarlison is desperate to get out to play for Brazil. The Brazilian guys, they want to play for Brazil in this here and now. And I think the COVID thing has warped it a little bit, but the only thing that can warp it more is pushing for this once every 2 year debacle. Please stop, Alexi Lalas, please stop. By the way, now everyone in chat is asking for us two to go on hot ones. It doesn't work like that, everyone in chat. Alan BR says, Rog would be incredible on hot ones. On the flip side, Davo's far too cool. There's no chance he would even sweat.
Oh, no, I would. I'd just be hiccuping like an idiot for the entire time. It would just be all over for me immediately.
You'd never appear more human. Brandon Monzon, we love a great GFOP's first name and his last name ending on, please don't go anywhere, Karen Ruiz. But Brandon Monzon, come be with us. Where are you from? What's your question?
Coming to you guys from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Wow.
I know you guys did the Great Visit Britain series, but I'm getting ready to go back over to the bridge for the Man U game over Thanksgiving weekend. And the last time I went there was Boxing Day and saw a wonderful display of shithousery from Southampton and lost to nothing. And so I feel like I bond with Raj in this aspect where I will not do anything I did that time because I'm the sole person that caused that loss.
Science.
Yeah. And that's
the way. By the way, Dr. Fauci would back you up on that.
And so I was hoping if you guys would give me some recommendations for a good pregame or postgame watering hole restaurant to alter the fate this time.
Oh, Dave.
Well, you know, people always ask me for places down the King's Road or the Fulham Road, and there are so many good pubs, so many good places. You don't want to be too close to the ground. I would stick more to the, you know, Sloane Square end of the King's Road, and then take that gorgeous long walk down the King's Road, cut up and go down the Fulham Road, and take that long walk after you've had like a nice lunch. So a couple of good places in sort of Knightsbridge and South Kent as well. Hereford Arms is always a nice place. I used to go there before the games. But you can also, there is public transportation in London. The best restaurant in London, bar none, Rog, and it's like a little calf, you would love it, is Palomar in Soho. It's an Israeli restaurant. It is just brilliant. It is my favorite sort of diner, calf restaurant in London, Palomar in Soho. So I would say go to Palomar and then get on the tube and get over there to the bridge and enjoy your day.
And make sure you act really offensively on that tube so you end up in your Chelsea colours on Twitter, as Chelsea fans just being deeply offensive on the way to the game. That's the spirit. That is what the lads want in every regard. I go to the... by the way, if we're naming anything... And by the way, J-Dubs has just texted me this, but I did watch this film again this morning because I love it. Whenever I'm feeling low, I don't know if I've told you I'm feeling low today because Marty Scorsese has gone off. I watch my visit to the Regency Cafe, the Regency Caf, which I went to ahead of my first visit to Chelsea Football Club, where we watched Everton grind out a terribly boring 0-0 draw. But it's nowhere near Chelsea. Go early on the morning of match day to the Regency Caf. Google it. Watch our video. Go and have that. I've watched it and I just crave that full English. I took it for granted when I was there. Had to eat two of them because for continuity, and I had two full English breakfast. It was amazing. Just go to the Regency Cafe while it's still there in every regard. And the Chelsea pig, There's also a great bar restaurant that we'd highly recommend. Just go and make great memories. Brandon Monzon, you really can't miss. And send photos, you beautiful human being. Be safe. Enjoy every second. Make great memories. That fills us with joy that you are going over there. You amazing man. Two more questions. Karen Ruiz, we're coming to you soon. But Jonah, come on up. What is your question? Let's do it. Where are you from?
Fellas. Also from colorful Grand Rapids, Michigan. So shout out to Charles.
What are the odds? What are the odds that we can have one? Like, how many people live in Grand Rapids, Michigan? How many people?
I think it's, last I checked, it's just me and Charles. So
I'm looking at the Grand. There's 198,401 people in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We have two of them on this green room tonight. That is just like, that's an amazing feat. That makes me so bloody happy. What's the best place in Grand Rapids, Michigan? Tell us.
The best place is a little tavern called Donkey Takira in Easttown. Fantastic food. It's to die for. It's so
good. Oh my God. I love it. People come here, not for the football tour. They come here for the travel tips. Donkey to Kikiki. We are going to go there. My God. Stephen Sobel in the chat says Brandon Monzon is the best on since Solomon Rondon, which I do love. But Jonah, what is your question?
And please stop me if I'm being grumpy or unreasonable.
You sound like Morrissey. Come on.
Exactly. Just seems like U.S. soccer is so chaotic from a business perspective. We have World Cup qualifiers going on that, if you ask anyone outside of soccer, they don't know what's going on because it's so poorly advertised. And we have games on Paramount Plus and then CBS and then ESPN and Fox, and it's too much. And U.S. soccer's website is awful. It gives no information. It's so hard to navigate. It's just, we have to idiot-proof soccer here in the U.S. if we want it to grow and to reach people that we want to gain new fans, right? So we need to idiot-proof it. We need to explain structures and qualifying and international versus club. So I don't know. What do you guys...
What are you asking? Why is this not making more noise? I actually think we need to actually try and engage more idiots. We need to do the opposite of idiot proof it. We need to just try and market it just to idiots. That would be in America. That would be, that's one strategy. But you're asking a question. Essentially, I'm hearing, why is this game not big? I mean, by the way, US soccer don't own all the rights to the games. They get to sell the rights to home games, but anyone can bid on the away games. Hence, like CBS bid the most. I think in past years we had Bein swoop up off the individual. Buy it off Honduras, you buy it off Costa Rica. So the rights question is complicated and it is a dance. It's frustrating. That is outside of US soccer's control in every regard. I mean, the question is, why is this not bigger in the here and now? This is, you're right, Jonah, in the soccer bubble, this is the biggest thing. This is it. This is like one of those brothers having a fight. I can't even remember their names. Who were the fight? The brothers who decided their boxers. Not the IUs, the other ones. Yeah, the Pauls.
Oh, the Pauls.
Yeah, Jake, they decided Paul, their Logan boxers. That's a bit. Why is Mexico against USA not even like half a Paul, but an unknown Paul brother fighting, David?
Yeah, look, the other day on one of my other jobs on Jeopardy, fantastic contestant, in
Matamote.
No, it wasn't Matamodio. New Haven's Matamodio, by the way. One of the contestants in an interview said that she attended the first ever Dos Acero game in the modern era. And there was this confused look on the part of everybody in the studio, all the other contestants, everybody in the control room, everybody around, as though we had to stop the whole thing because she'd started talking gibberish in the middle of her interview and had clearly lost it. And I was like, no, Dos Acero is the US-Mexico. This is like the famous scoreline and people are still looking at me like I'm crazy. And I think it's so tough for us to understand because we spend our life living in this culture and understanding it. I think, the one point, and I completely agree with you, both in terms of the points you make, yes, and both can be true. The US cannot completely control
every single international game and where it plays. And at the same time, they can do more. One of the reasons that the Premier League has really worked and really grown in the US is because of the superb job that NBC Sports did when they took the Premier League rights. And I know that we are terribly conflicted when we say that because we are part of the NBC Sports family. But just the way they handled it, they treated it like a big league sport, and they got pretty much every coverage decision absolutely right. And I don't think that's true of the US games. And so, but it's not just the coverage of the games. It's also the shoulder coverage. It's all the other publicity that happens. It's where it is. And it is, unfortunately, you know, over the last, you know, since the loss to Trinidad and Tobago, Roger, you and I have spoken about a lot. It seems to have gone down a little bit in the US public sports market consciousness. And it's a shame. And I'm not quite sure that we're on much of a path to getting back there with these games spread over everywhere. Now it will be there because the 2026 World Cup will be huge, and God willing, the 2022 World Cup will work, and the US will do well, and that will capture imagination again. But right now, it's just not in a very good place.
I mean, I can't add much to that, Jonah, other than I have obsessed about, you know, I am not an optimist, but I'm also for US soccer. The man who invented the notion of a Kyle Beckham and Wonder Goal. I'm not a pessimist, but I am a realist. And, you know, you look at what we've achieved, and I do feel we've come a long way in many regards on the men's side. But we need to prepare, and we never seem to adequately, for that first game out of a group stage where we play the first proper team. And the mentality, I've said this so many times, I know this is repetitive, but it's clearly like not progressing. I want our football players to take the field against a European power or a South American power or even a moderate power and believe they can beat them. That's like before the whistle is blown, do our players feel outgunned? Do they feel outmatched by a Belgium? Do they feel a dread, or do they feel they were prepared adequately for this moment? So the television stuff, all that stuff, I know that's outside of US soccer's purview. But ultimately, that's what I deeply, deeply care about. That's the core. That's how I monitor success or failure. And I want to see us. I want to see us do what it takes to get there, Jonah. More than I can say, we should be there now. We should be there. We've been handed. All I can say for now, we have been handed a great potential cast of characters, an incredible array of talent. Dave and I are both from England. We both watched a golden generation be frittered away. We cannot let this great young wave of American talent be similarly frittered away, is all I can say. And a great lot. If I had a trumpet and Dave had a bugle, Karen Ruiz, we would be blowing it. Now, you are so patient. I wanted your question to be the last one. It's an important one. It's a hard one. It's a complex one. It's not one we can like take another hot sauce question from afterwards. So I wanted this to be the last. But Karen Ruiz, patient Karen Ruiz, great Karen Ruiz, tell us where you're from. The floor is yours.
Hi, I am a new listener from Long Beach, California. And if you haven't been there, I highly recommend going to the Legends Sports Bar on 2nd Street. It's a great place to watch games.
I am typing this down, Karen Ruiz. This is, you are just the gift that keeps on giving. That's not even your question. You're just giving out Yelp reviews, and I love it. What is your question?
So my question has to do with the upcoming World Cup in terms of, you know, international break happening right now. And it's, you know, qualifiers are going to end soon. I mean, it's been talked about before. I just am very curious to see how the focus on Qatar will play out behind, you know, with everything that once the World Cup hits there. I just can't imagine, especially with, you know, players have, you know, become slightly more outspoken about, you know, social issues. I mean, I think even after the Euros ended, when Toni Kroos like announced his retirement from international play, he referenced his displeasure, I believe, in the World Cup happening in Qatar as part of not maybe the sole reason, but a good reason as to why he decided to retire. Mm-hmm. And I just can't I don't know. I'm very curious as to how to balance my excitement for the World Cup, but also the political aspect of it being hosted there and how to reconcile the two, I suppose.
How can we be excited for a World Cup, which is for both Dave and me, and I don't like to speak for David, but in this case, it's the spine to our life. It's some of the great memories, how we measure time through World Cups. A World Cup in Qatar feels so different, so dark, so complex. You know, how can we get excited for the World Cup when it's just devastating that it's in Qatar?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you, I feel very torn about it. It does seem as though the protests that took place earlier this year and last year by, I think it was Dutch and Danish, Norwegian, German players seem to have petered out a little bit. Because there was a moment where I thought, you know what, there's a good chance that this World Cup doesn't happen. It feels like the questions about migrant workers and the mortality rates against migrant workers, the answers from the Qatari authorities have been so poor, but it just doesn't seem to generate a lot of interest or ink amongst journalists who no doubt are reading the mood of football fans. I can't believe that it's not going to a great extent make this World Cup complicated to watch. So much of World Cups for me, and I think this was less so in Russia, but I think it was certainly, you know, true in, you know, Japan and even that World Cup in Germany and France is these Italy, these amazing World Cups that travel around countries, and it's a love affair with the nation and the love affair with the nation's love of football as well. I don't think we're going to get any of that in Qatar. It's going to be at best a sterile World Cup, at worst a completely compromised World Cup, corrupt World Cup. And I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough.
Yeah. So first of all, I'm grateful for the question. I think we all need to talk about it more. I can remember where I was and the feelings I had when we all tuned in to find out who was going to win this World Cup award. And when they announced Qatar, it was just like, it was as if my eyeballs fell out. And it was just like, what? I mean, what? It was so craven. It was so repulsive. This game we love. I mean, we know when we lift up the rock of football, it's just, we don't want to see the underside. We were all forced to glimpse the underside. And I've talked a lot about this, and I won't repeat it now, about how we watch football for the emotional, the ineffable, the transcendent. We don't watch it for the, you know, we don't want a crash course in geopolitics. You know, I'd love to do a podcast with Tommy Vitor, Pod Save America. I don't know if anyone would listen. I don't know if any of you would listen if we did get into the geopolitics of football, because we watch football for like a Yuri Tielemans moment of wonder. We watch it for Mo Salah skipping through the Manchester City back line. We watch it for, my God, whenever Everton just fart in a goal somehow. Maybe we don't watch it for that. But football number two has always been repulsive. Let's be candid. The World Cup in 1934 in Italy, Mussolini had the tickets ornately paper cut so that journalists would go home and show them as propaganda of how great a nation Italy is. David and I were both alive. It was my first footballing memories, the 1978 World Cup in Argentina, where the military junta rounded up and murdered thousands of people so that they could clean up the country, so that the World Cup, when they shone their eyes on it, thought well of Argentina, who actually ended up winning. And it was amazing to watch Argentina when we didn't know. Russia, oh my God, what are we talking about? Russia, the last World Cup, if that was not a propaganda coup just handed to Vladimir Putin, then what was? And so this fits into something that is not new, but it does feel new because of where it is, because of the deaths, the horrendous deaths that have been brushed under the carpet. And the honest truth, Karen, is I can't answer your question in any way. I don't know how you can square that circle of how do we all just flock over there and cheer on for the US like we did in Brazil, and just cheer them on and pretend that we turn off our moral reality when it comes to this. I don't know what we do, but I do know we need to talk about it more. It annoys me a bit, these flickering protests that die out as soon as the teams actually qualify. I think there will be some flickering protests. There were, by the way, Argentina 78, there were some player protests in the wake. There weren't during. You know, Cruyff didn't turn up for that World Cup. No one's quite sure why. People say it was because of that. There's many reasons. Because of the political reasons, there's many reasons that have been floated. No one knows for sure. And all I can say is we need to talk about it. We need to discuss it. It needs to be addressed. We can't allow the cognitive dissonance of cool football. Yuri Tielemans' great goal. Let's not talk about it. But we need to work out how to talk about it. And we do need to come to terms. Karen, I'm going to give you the last word because you've been so bloody patient. And I don't want everyone to be like, oh, my God, which is what everybody was in Russia about how great the Wi-Fi was in the stadium, the fastest Wi-Fi ever. So that one Brazil fan could like, it was, by the way. It was J-Dubs and I went to a game in Russia. It was Brazil. I can't remember who they were playing. It was Brazil. They killed them. It was Brazil, Serbia. It was a terrible game of football. And the Brazilian fans just spent the whole time with their cell phones in front of their faces, FaceTiming their friends in Brazil, telling them how great it was in Russia. And how much Red Square had like been cleaned up. You know, I've been to Russia many times. Red Square was like it was stunning this time. It was not the last few times I've been there. So I don't know you asked the question. I'm going to give you the last answer before we wrap up.
It's hard for me because with Russia specifically, like my family is Peruvian. And for us, Peru, that was the first time Peru was in the World Cup for a long time. So like my whole family gathered together, we celebrated, we watched our loss to Denmark and whatnot. But at the same time, you know, you see those little clips during in between games of like the highlights of, you know, the Red Square and whatnot. And you kind of just gloss over the country that's hosting. But at the same time, I don't know. I feel like the players themselves, you know, with taking a knee or, you know, wearing equality t-shirts and whatnot, I'm curious to see what the teams, the players will do. If they're even allowed to do anything, we'll see. But I just, with social media, I just feel that this has, I don't know. I feel like Qatar is going to be a different situation and I'm just curious to see how it'll go. And I have mixed feelings, but I am very excited for the soccer aspect. I'm nervous and just waiting for the impact of it being hosted in Qatar or what that will be.
I honestly thought we'd never get to this day. I always thought that there'd be some complication. I remember during the Brazil World Cup, a South American ESPN correspondent tweeted giddily, "Qatar out, USA about to step in. FIFA about to make an announcement," and we all got a text saying, "Please do not retweet that. It's not true." And I was like both excited and gutted in equal mention. I can't believe we're getting this close to it. It's so bloody real. It's so bloody dark. Karen Ruiz, thank you for ending this on a real note, a beautiful note, and triggering a conversation that we really need to keep working at. We need to keep framing. We need to keep engaging with. Davo, take us home.
Yeah, love Long Beach too. Just was down there playing a tennis tournament.
How did it go?
Eldorado Park, Rogers. It's magical. I won one draw. I lost another. Yeah, I had a crushing defeat against a lovely young man. I can't remember his name.
Roscoe Tanner.
No. I did play against a guy who played at Wimbledon the other day. He beat me pretty handily as well. But no, it was not Roscoe Tanner, although he beat me too.
Who was the guy at Wimbledon?
His name is
Bjorn.
No, he got in 86.
I can't remember his name.
In 86 he beat Connors at Wimbledon. He's still one of the top, you know, players in my age group, over 134 in the US.
Was his name Noah from the Bible?
No, he's still a very good player. That's it for Spotify Green Room, Rog. We will break down the Mexico game on next week's pod. That's Monday and Tuesday, Rog. You're doing a very special Green Room after the Jamaica game. That'll be around 7
It'll be very
PM
green.
Eastern time. Until then, bend the point, Rog.
I've got to give a quick toast.
Oh, you do. Sorry, I was taking you through the end.
I know.
I'm going to play tennis.
I know. Bjorn Borg's currently just with his pickleball bat, waiting for David. I just say, I felt very sad when I began this podcast. I'm quite elated. The fact that in an international break, there's always a dip in news. It's really rather pathetic. And the fact that you can all ask us enough questions. We thought we'd be out of here at about 8:37 today. The fact that they're at 7:37, the fact that you can ask us enough questions to keep talking this long is just a source of joy. I feel like we botched the hot sauce answer. It will be an ongoing saga. Send us your best hot sauces, America. I love you, David. You are the best tennis player. Any L's are fake L's. Just keep going. Just keep being. Your joy in tennis fills me with happiness.
I'm not the best, but I'm trying. I'm competing, Rog. I'm enjoying competing. I'm learning a lot about myself.
You are. You are.
I'm still going.
You are. Because if it's not about the winning, what's the point? I'm just using lines you've used on me for Everton before. But go on.
Well, no, you've got to try to win things. I am trying to win things. I have won a couple of things, but I'm losing more than I win, which is a good reminder for me. So that's the first time it's happened to me in my tennis career. But I'm learning a lot about myself. I'm learning a lot about intent, Rog. I'm learning a lot about the limits of my body. I have so many awarenesses. I didn't understand the awarenesses now. Oh my God, I've got awarenesses everywhere.
I love this. By the way, I just want you to know, I love tennis, Dave. I love this. It's a mortal Dave. And I just love when Christian Pulisic in the future says, I had an awareness. I just know Dave is shouting at the television. Yeah, stop boasting that you just had one, you little bastard. You just had one awareness.
I've got so many.
Let's take your same, Daddy.
Vanderpool
cake.
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Bulls win, Bulls win.
See that, Gloria.
Bulls lose.
To Tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fighter, Mac. I love you very much, Davey.
Love you too, Rog. And you're going to survive without Marty Scorsese. It'll all be fine.
You just brought me to a dark place again, you bastard.
It's good. It's good. Bye.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit.
You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba.
And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights.
You know, kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love because you're the long-distance lovebirds.
It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know.
Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.